This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Gadget Geek show number 339, recorded on December 28th, last show of 2017. Here at Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the Average Guy.com studios in a blustery Bellevue, Nebraska. Edward, have you looked ahead at the weather? Negative 23 on Sunday. Like, we haven't seen this cold in a while.
No. Yeah. I've seen reports elsewhere, but it hasn't gotten quite that bad yet here, so.
Yeah, well, we're going to see the weather for the Omaha area, 19 today, or 19 tomorrow, 2 on Saturday, negative 2 on Sunday, negative 29 that night. Yikes. We have not been that cold here in the Omaha area in a while. And then it comes back, but we got some cold weather. The good news is we can stay inside, mine cryptocurrency. Keeps the house plenty warm, right? Of course, we post a show with world-class show notes each week out at theaverageguy.tv. Sometimes I do come into the basement, and I know when the miners aren't running because it's cold down here.
And yeah. Like,
hey, that's my alert mechanism. Want to remind everyone, you can get us live every week on our mobile app. Head out to homegadgetgeeks.com if you want to follow us out there. Best way, download is free on Android or iPhone. Best way to listen mobile or any other time. It's out there, available for you, homegadgetgeeks.com. Mike Wieger is out on assignment, actually. He's having a baby. Not he, but Hannah is having a baby. And so he is out. He really wanted to be a part of this program. So, Mike, we miss you tonight. And then a big thanks to Dave McCabe and Keith Lunsford last week. The Big Drone Show got a lot of good positive feedback on that show as well. A lot of interest in that. And we want to thank those guys. If you haven't gone out and listened to the most recent Reset episode from Dave, head out to reset.fm and watch it or listen to it on the web or download it. Talks a little bit about his time on the show, plus some of the crypto stuff that we've been talking about. So if you hadn't subscribed to Reset, go out and get that done. But we thank Dave and Keith both for coming in. And don't forget, the time is growing short on the original t-shirts we had available for Home Gadget Geeks. If you haven't gotten it yet, head out to theaverageguy.tv/shirts. They're available for you, $17.99. We're going to make those available for a limited time. I think I'll probably end that mid-January or so, and then we'll do a new t-shirt design, and we won't come back to those original OG shirts for Home Gadget Geek. So if you want to get those, theaverageguy.tv/shirts. Well, Edward is no stranger to Home Gadget Geeks. Edward, welcome back, and glad to have you.
Thanks for having me.
No, good to have you. We are excited to have, like, there has never been, like, I was telling you this in pre-show. I've gone back and listened to the other two or three. I think we've done three with you shows that we've talked about. Plus, I interviewed you at InfoTech, or in fact, you have a sign from your InfoTech days there. Why don't you?
So this is 2015. This is my talk at InfoTech. So I just found this the other day. I thought I'd share it.
Yeah, so that's right now, how Bitcoin will affect you in the next 3 years. That was you covering that. It's interesting. I had you on the show in the day when we first started doing this. It was kind of a novelty, you know, we're thinking about Bitcoin. Everybody's like, oh, ha, 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 whatever that is. And like a lot of those things, I'll just admit, 50% of what you talked about just kind of went right over my head. I was agreeing with you. So I went back. I'm like, oh, I wonder how much I really missed. And after the last 6 months of kind of digging in on this cryptocurrency stuff, I went back and listened to him again. I'm like, oh, I missed so many good questions that if I had just known, I would have asked you. But you agreed to come back on. So thanks for doing that. I appreciate it.
I'm glad you understand. Like, I mean, yeah, there's certainly, you can be able to talk, I guess, or use some terminology or really understand something is certainly, there's two different things. And so, you know, as you continue to read and study, you'll hopefully get grasped it all better. And I've seen a lot from like on your Facebook group and such about, from other people as well, about all their crypto adventures. So it's been funny to see that.
Yeah, it's been fun. I've been working with Dave McKay, Mike Wieger, a bunch of us have gotten into it. And it does remind me, Dave talks a little bit about this on his most recent episode of Reset. It does remind me of our old home server days from 2008, 2009, when we were all building these monster home server rigs, and it was like, how much RAID could you put in there, and how could you tweak them to get better drive performance, and how big, you know, how I got 16 terabytes, you know, and it was kind of a race to see who could build the biggest gear. I feel like we've kind of rallied, at least some of us have rallied around this with gear, because it's a gear intensive, and it's not just GPUs and video cards. We've been mining on Burst, which is a hard drive based or storage based miner. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later, but so there's other ways to do it. But now that I've got through the GPU stuff, I'm starting to stack up hard drives again. And I feel like I've come full circle to the home server show.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
with somebody.
Go ahead.
Somebody from your group actually is who turned me on to Burst, because I had not even looked at it yet before they brought it up last time we were on or something like that. So
yeah, I think Ken did. He's been on it, I can't remember. It's a 6 cent, you know, it's at 6 cents right now. And it, but you know, for our community, Burst, I think, is the one. If you don't want to invest $200 in a GPU, most of the folks that listen to me for my home server days probably still have some storage gear laying around, and it doesn't take a very powerful CPU, and it does help to have a bunch of RAM. All of a sudden, like, you have a home server, like low CPU for energy usage, high. A lot of them have put a lot of RAM in there to kind of handle all the stuff that was going on, or they could run multiple things in it, and a whole bunch of hard drives. Well, that's a Burst box. You know, that's, yep, if you're going to build a Burst miner. Very energy efficient. Yeah, it mines its own blockchain. You can get rewards. It's got a big community around it. There's some interesting things you can do. So all of a sudden, we come full circle back to the home server stuff.
Yeah. You could talk about, like, I don't know if this is a great analogy. I was just thinking about when you're saying that. Like, what other analogies can you come up with along those lines? But, you know, talk about, like, Elon Musk and the Boring Company and, like, digging tunnels like the subway. Like, we're back to subways again, but these are, like, electromagnetic subways and such. So
yeah, well, what's interesting is some of the same gear, like, we've kind of scaled down our home servers, and we use them in some form or fashion, and I still have the N40L. That's was my last gen home server before we stopped really doing that stuff. It's still my home server and still running, but I still have all these components around here from those days. You know, I've got hard drive docks and a bunch of hard drives that were stacked up and stuff I wasn't using. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this kind of stuff would work pretty good for this. And the power consumption so much different from on Burst than it would be for the rest of them, because your hard drive runs at about 5 watts. And so, you know, even 10 or 15 drives probably equal the same power consumption on a GPU. And the way Burst mines, it's sporadic on the hard drive. So it's not like it's running full tilt the whole time, right? So it's not like you're running 5 watts the whole time. So you can get a whole bunch more storage out there for probably less than you would have one card. A lot of us are mining on 2 or 3 or 4 cards. We're going to see your rig here in a few minutes. But so Burst is for home server people. Burst, I think, is a better option. It's kind of fun if you want to get your way into it. I'm going to do on Saturday afternoon, we're going to do a little open session here at theaverageguy.tv. I've got some from the Facebook group, some guys joining me. We're going to talk about some of the various options, because not everybody's wanted to go deep in this and so through the show. So we're going to do our own thing this Saturday, just with some folks from the Facebook group, and talk about that. But Burst is a great way to do it. I imagine if Burst has any success, there'll be a couple copycats that probably pop up, right?
But why would it? How are you, other than their mining structure, like, what is the, how are you differentiating it from storage or SIA?
Well, those are actual storage offerings. So okay. Burst is not about storage at all. It's all about plots. Yeah. And so, right, you're plotting those hard drives, and then it's finding the solutions for each of those nodes via the plots on the hard drive, and it's securing the blockchain that way. So instead of running a GPU, you're running on hard drives.
Got it.
There's no storage contract. It's all about mining coins with Burst.
What is the purpose of Burst then? Does it have one, or you're just making money?
I think at this point, I think it kind of started, and I bet they've got some kind of idea what they're trying to do. You know, most of them saw the problems with Bitcoin early. This is what I'm finding out is like, I think the whole cryptocurrency knew that that Bitcoin's not scalable. Like it just doesn't scale. And so the next generation in 2014, the next generation of all these blockchains that started coming out, all these offerings, and it seemed like they all came out within like 6 months of each other in 2014, were to try to address transaction speed and size and number of transactions. They all saw this coming, and security, right? There was a jump to 256, to SHA 256. At that time, the NSA came out with that and said, hey, you guys should probably use this thing. And I mean, that's a loose technical explanation of what actually happened. Not sure it went down that way. But so they began this second wave, right, of cryptocurrencies that were different. And I think Burst is one of those other ones that tries to be green. They saw they saw that, like, hey, these were burning the amount of power that's you know, the size of the United States every day in to just mine cryptocurrency. Is this great for the economy? Is this great for the environment? And so, you know, I think these guys at Burst are like, hey, you can use hard drives and do the same thing. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I like proof of work. I'm a fan of proof of work, but whether it has a real future or not is anybody's guess. So.
Yeah. Well, does any of this have a future? I think that's the real question. Edward, that seems to be the question that the media is asking right now. Like, It's great that this is, I mean, people are speculating wildly on price, and it has turned into its own commodity, you know? And so the press, how do you answer that question? You're in this space. When you look at the future and besides the speculative purchasing and some of those things, what is the future as you see it, since you had that sign?
I think so. Something specifically about proof of work, you know, you could talk about and some of what we're doing in terms of, cause we are building a mining farm. And so we are, trying to figure out how we do that as cost effectively as possible, like everybody else is. But you know, you start to look like liquid cooled, equipment that, you know, you can, at least minimize or save some, you can do some things more efficiently. Long term, I mean, you know, does it matter if we see, we are seeing blockchain adoption, right? So are the two tied together, between blockchain being adopted and cryptocurrency being adopted, or can one be adopted without the other? Because, you know, if you deal with money and Burst and how you're going to use Burst to send your buddy some cash, are people moving away ideologically or politically or whatever from the US dollar and, you know, looking for alternatives? And I don't know the reasons why they're doing it, but they certainly are getting out of the dollar for some reason and getting into crypto. And is it truly speculative, or is there something deeper behind it? I don't know the answer. And then if they start to understand it, then they can go take it back to their work and use it there. And so those are all the things that I think are at play and that do interplay. But it's just kind of like hold your breath and dive in. And one thing I've noticed from mining is, like, as soon as we started mining, there's been a lot of Wi-Fi issues I've noticed. And so I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but I'm still, trying to track that down. So.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've noticed, so I was looking at my bandwidth usage, and, you know, you think mining in general shouldn't use a lot of bandwidth. It's just kind of sending little packets back and forth. They're not very big. But I set up the Saya box, and lately over the last couple of weeks, it's been super chatty to the network, and it's been using a lot of data. Now, that's the whole idea, is you store somebody else's data and it's secured and they pay for it and some of those kinds of things. But it's been more than I expected in it. And also the UI has not been working very well for me. So I need to contact their support and do some other things. But so you never know, right? You just kind of with these kinds of things, if you're going to get into the storage based ones, either storage or Saya, you're going to probably expect some bandwidth. In the days when I have an unlimited bandwidth from Cox, I didn't care. I just like, okay, fine. If it takes extra bandwidth, no worries. Now with a terabyte limit, and, you know, I'm kind of like, well, okay, if I'm selling, because like on Saya, I've put up up to 4 terabytes of storage. Both SIA and storage will allow you to use NAS boxes. So I've got them attached to my Drobo. And so I can kind of manage it that way. But if someone uploaded and then pulled down 1 terabyte, I'd be done. Right. And I started thinking about that, like, oh, okay, I better be careful. Like, I better be careful with this because I could blow through my cap. So make sure you read the directions, I think, before you jump into one of these.
But does that relate to, is the Cox change related to net neutrality then, or is that?
No, it's always been. Okay. They're trying to, I'm sure they had a few bad apples, a few bad actors who were abusing the system. And so it was a way of, so ironically, my daughter used to never connect her phone to the Wi-Fi when she was home. And those were in the days we didn't have unlimited service on the phone. And she would almost blow through her cap every single month. And I'm like, Samantha, connect to the Wi-Fi. We had unlimited. Well, that flipped. Sprint gave out unlimited data and now Cox is limited. And so the other day I was looking at her phone usage because I was wondering, like, why is my wife, or why is the data usage so high? I was looking at her phone. Well, sure enough, she's connected to the Wi-Fi. She's used 65 gig on her phone since she's been home from school for break. I was like, it's all YouTube. You know, it's just, it's streaming 4K or whatever on YouTube. So, you kind of got to be careful what you're doing there. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Alpha Bitcoin because I want to give some folks an update. Since we talked last, you guys have put a new box, a new ATM, right? New kiosk in Lincoln. Yep. Talk a little bit about that.
So we have one in Lincoln now and we're, I'm maintaining it still, right? So it's still within my driving distance, but we're getting ready to go outside of that driving distance. And now I'm going to have to, it's a little, be an adventure to, you know, rely on the cash service, you know, whoever we have maintaining it is going to be, it's going to be in their hands now. So Lincoln is going well. We can do, you can buy and sell Bitcoin and Litecoin there. And then where the fees have been, you know, the Bitcoin fees to send money is recently. So we are going to we're going to have Bitcoin and Litecoin now in Omaha as well. So if you want to buy Litecoin, you should be able to next month. So, so it's going well. It's about a third the volume of Omaha. So, I mean, if you look at like the city is about 1/10 the size. So, you know, it seems to be pretty good for that size city. So.
Yeah. So Litecoin seems to be has become kind of the de facto and what people have moved to because the network transaction fees have gotten so expensive, right? As the way it works with crypto, as the traffic picks up, the fees pick up. I'm assuming that's to keep it at some kind of manageable level. Or why is that? Why do the fees pick up, or why has it gotten so expensive on Bitcoin to do transaction as opposed to just the price?
Well, you have to put every transaction has to have a price, and then you just logically, I mean, the way Satoshi built it, you logically have the higher prices get in first. And so then as people, it's just an auction. So as people start paying more, then otherwise it's to avoid the spam on the system. Basically, that's why there is a price period at all. So,
yeah. Oh, that makes sense. So you can bid in the price and to move anything, the transaction times were taking so long, you'd have to continue to up and up and up bid the price.
Yep.
What keeps that the same thing? So say we all flood over to Litecoin for this. What keeps that from happening there, or will it?
I don't know of any technological, you know, breaking mechanism to stop that from happening. There are, I'm sure, some cryptos, I don't know off the top of my head, do have some ways around that, and they're all different, you know, fee structures. But I don't, you know, you talk about Dash, where Dash has, you know, this kind of a crypto of payments type thing. That's how they're billing themselves. And so then, you know, they're dealing with microtransactions and have, that's their sweet spot. And so they've kind of tied everything to that. And so then you have a scenario where, even if it goes up, it might not go up that much, but the network can handle more transactions. So it's not a big deal, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, and that seems to be in the space where everybody's going to compete. I think we have seen Bitcoin has been exposed, like, okay, maybe this isn't going to work as well. Oh, maybe that one gig, is it one gig or one meg? maybe the one meg block will make a difference, right? And this is where Bitcoin Gold and or Bitcoin Cash tried to separate, and where we almost had that other fork that they canceled. So everybody's now, it's funny, they're all just copies of Bitcoin, and yet now everybody's starting to differentiate themselves. We do this better, or we do that better. Really important, I think, if you're going to understand each of these coins, that you really read their white paper as well as their marketing materials, as why do they're separating, why they, and they all have this little niche of some kind, or at least they're working on this little niche, which I think is really cool. So Edward, why not Ethereum? Why is not, why has Ethereum not become the de facto? Why Litecoin and why not Ethereum?
I think people, there's a, I think, I guess, the why do you, or, yeah, I don't know whether Ethereum has not become the de facto. I think that there's a, it is, people keep it because it, they can do stuff with it, whereas Litecoin is more of like a throwaway. Like, why do I have Litecoin? Well, it's $200. It's been $200 for the past 6 months. Like, so I can, it's a store of value that is fairly steady. And so I think people jump to that because they can buy CryptoKitties with their Ethereum, but they can't buy it with their Litecoin. So,
okay, what does that mean? What are CryptoKitties? What does that mean?
Just if you Google it, so it's a game on the blockchain where they tokenize, they look like little Pokemon animals, and they're kittens. And so you buy these kittens and you groom them, you raise them, they store value, they as they grow older, they have they become more valuable, they have different features that cause them, so it's all these different tangible or visible reflections of what a coin does or is. And so they made them into kittens, and people, the Ethereum network's gone crazy, people buying and selling CryptoKitties.
I don't know how I haven't heard about this yet. My community would go nuts with that, by the way. They'd be like, oh, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But it's gamification of it, right? I mean, that's really what drives a lot of this, you know, kind of a lot of the frenzy that's going on is a little bit of a gamification. I have a storage. That coin is a token, right, that sits on Ethereum. How is that different? It's not technically a coin. I can trade it, right? But is it a coin, or is it, it seems like it has some tie to Ethereum.
So it was, I don't remember what it was built on or what they, you know, I should know. Anyways, it was built on something else, and then they
converted it, right?
Right. Yeah. So if you think about it, this might not be the greatest definition, explanation, but if you think about it, like the, when you're writing contracts in Ethereum and the, using Solidity or, you know, the language of the smart contracts there, they essentially, instead of using PHP, they're now using Solidity, right? So they're using the same basic terminology or language or coding to, whereas before they were doing something a little more obscure. So.
Okay. Yeah. I just noticed it was a little different. I had to use a different kind of wallet to get to it. So it's just not, even though it's traded on the exchanges, it just seemed a little bit different.
Did you go through did you have some that you had to convert then, or was this all after the,
this is all after the fact. Yeah, no, I got in right after they had made the conversion. So I didn't have to worry about conversion, but I think I used my Ether wallet for that. And so I gave them a number, and what's interesting, right, is each one of these uses a little bit of a different security system. And I shouldn't say each one, but many of them are a little bit different in the way they're doing things, and their wallets are a little bit different. And so it's just, for me, I don't know, it's that challenge, and maybe it's no different than buying kitties, but it's the
intrigue. It's annoying. It's a problem. I mean, it is a problem. It's just to try to keep up and try to figure out, you know, if you're trying to pick winners, you know, if you want to make a lot of money or price, then how or why is this one different? You know, you're digging for needle in the haystack for what it does, you know, and if it's going to be a valuable change.
I've heard a lot of people say, don't you wish you'd gotten into this a year ago, especially like on the mining side or that. And I've even thought of that myself. But then as I've dug into this, a lot of the software is maturing right now that's actually usable. So as I've gone back and read through a lot of the communities, I've seen just a real mess and things not mature and things not ready and wallets getting hacked and people losing a lot of money and the community has not been mature. Edward, I'm actually kind of glad I come to the community at the end of 2017 because I think it's ready for the average tech guy. So not the average guy, but kind of the average tech guy at this point. If I can do it, others can do it as well. Now, is it easy? No, there's still some. I spent the day working with Dave McCabe, getting him set up on Burst. It's not intuitive. Like it took me 2 or 3 days to figure out all the pieces to get that set up. I walked him through it in about a half a day, knowing what I know. There's all kinds of videos, but you watch videos from 2016, they're already way outdated. I mean, the software has changed or the coin has changed in storage's case. So I really do think, and I want to ask for your opinion. I really do think cryptocurrency is now ready for the average tech guy. Do you agree or disagree with me on that?
Why would they use it or need it or want it?
Well, for one, it has value, right? For two, it's interesting. And I think this is the angle I come at it. The blockchain is going to be a very, very significant part of what we do, no matter what, technically in the future. The blockchain is going to weave its way into this ledger, is going to weave its way into a whole bunch of things. And I think if you're a tech guy, you should probably understand what that actually means and how it works, right? Yeah. And so I don't come at the blockchain to make a bunch of money. Now, I've made a little bit of money. I mean, you can't not make money over the last 6 months, right? You'd have to be stupid to not make money over the last 6 months. Everybody has made money. So I don't want to tout that like, oh, look how smart I am. You just had to be in there. If I would have put money in, if I would have did what I said to you 2 years ago when we first had you on, we had this conversation. I said, maybe I should put $100 a month, dollar cost average it in through the ATM. That's what I was going to do. I was going to go down to Jones Brothers, put $100 in that way. Coinbase was still really immature in those days, right? I mean, we didn't have, that's another thing we didn't have a couple years ago. We didn't have Coinbase. We didn't have some of these other services to get dollars in. See, now that I see all that, I see how revolutionary your ATM was. You know, I'm like, wow, that was actually way ahead of its time. I think you getting that, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think, still there is people do ask, you know, or think that it's going to have some sort of obsolescence at some point. So if you remember, you and I were talking about having a true ATM with cryptocurrency functionality, and that's actually what we're going to sometime this year, the first half of this year, we'll hopefully deploy our first one that will be a true ATM with cryptocurrency. So the obsolescence question for the Bitcoin kiosks is a little irrelevant for us. Right now we're looking at basically what ATMs in the city we can replace. Yes, it was ahead of its time. It had its time, but I think we're going to see, just like you kind of described, a lot more integration into more traditional systems, just like CME and SIBO releasing their, shorts, positions. So.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I think for the average tech guy, to get back to your question of why does it matter, they need to know these things. And I cannot tell you how many conversations I've had with senior management around much like when we talked about storage or networking or some of those things. And, you know, the average tech guy that listens to the show was at the forefront of all these technologies as they were coming out. And many of them didn't have practical applications or very clear visions as to what they could be in those days. And of course now, you know, they have become pretty amazing, right? In what we do. So I think every tech guy owes themselves the learning and the knowledge and the education to get on these networks and figure out, okay, what the hell is going on out here? Cause it's wild. I mean, it is super wild right now, but if they're going to really consult into their companies or they're going to do stuff in a way that's meaningful, I think today they have to know what the blockchain is. I think the average tech guy has to be able to explain the blockchain and why it's important and why it does what it does. And so I just, you can't do that if you're not in it and doing it. Doesn't mean you got to go hog wild with it, right? But I think you need to know it, don't you think?
As a non-media guy, I never did understand the home server when the home server thing, and so maybe that's the paralleler. But I think I mentioned this to you. We have the blockchain hackathon coming up in Lincoln in April, and so you know, if any of the folks around here are have corporations that are getting some hands-on experience or building something, that's going to be kind of a startup weekend to prototype something using blockchain. So I'll have more information for you about that.
Yeah, there's some questions out in the chat room. You know, we've mentioned the price. We haven't really mentioned the price. You know, Bitcoin 264. I'll never forget that number, 264. When I very first talked to you, that was the, and I'm like, 200 for what? Like, that was my, what wizardry? Like, what Ponzi scheme? What kind of pyramid exists that values this thing at 264? I thought it was overvalued. We had you on again. I think it was 1200 the next time we had you on. Most recently, it's hit 19. Now it's backed off. Here's what cracks me up. I just got to say this. Here's what cracks me up. So for 1 month, it goes from, I'm going to say 12 or 13. So early December, it's around 12 or 13. And it for a day, it pings at 19. Oh, I don't know if it hit 20 or not. And it comes back to 15 and it's crashing. And you're like, guys, no, like, not even a month ago, like 15 would have been more than at the beginning of the month. So, but the media, all the media saw, or what most people saw, was 20. I'll just call it 20 to make it easy. And then it back to 15. It's a quarter, you know, a quarter of a percent. No, wait a minute. 30 days ago, it's still more value than 30 days ago. It's not crashing. But how do you, when we look at the value proposition for this and we think about the movement in it, how do you see that today? And I too, I kind of sense a bubble, right, coming on. But how do you address that?
It's speculative, but I think that people are going to, you know, the question becomes again: is it a technology or is it an ideology driving the price? And if you say it's an ideology, then there isn't necessarily a limit on where it can go because people are tired of whatever the yuan or, you know, the ruble or whatever that is being controlled by government, and they just want out of that system. And so not only that, but as they do start to say, oh, I can now I've got my Coinbase, I've got all this Ethereum, and now I can also, it's not just, you know, the pop monies from Fiserv and such, that, you know, you started to talk about remittances and person to person transfers. And those things are top line is pretty clunky still. It's, you know, all Fiserv stuff's pretty clunky. But people are not used to that concept. Whereas cryptocurrency, you buy it and you can send it right away. It's all built into the system really pretty easily. And so as people start to realize, oh, I now own my money. If I have my private keys, I now own my money and I can send it to anybody I want. Like, I really like those. Those are really two beneficial things for me because I'm getting tired of the Fed or whatever, you know. And again, now we have a whole another year of like an entirely new economy, which, you know, back in it was much more compelling or desirous, especially at least for me as a, you know, from a libertarian standpoint, to want to do this stuff under Obama. Now it's like, you know, now we've got to feel out Trump and his administration, figure out why or what he's going to do with it, and it's anybody's guess at this point still. I think he's unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, I know to say the least, right. We don't really ever know. You know, it's, I lived through the first dot-com bubble and, I remember 97, 98 and 99. There was a lot of questions that were being asked about the internet that are very similar to what we're saying about Bitcoin today, which is really interesting. I think many people have forgotten in those days. It was kind of like, okay, what is this thing? And how are we really going to use it? I mean, there was the 93, 94, 95 run up with AOL and people kind of getting online and you could get some access to the internet. And it kind of flips over in 97 with with all of a sudden people can now get directly to the internet. And I remember a 2 or 3 or 4 year period where it was kind of like, hey, not that, you know, we used to joke now, oh, that internet thing's a fad. But in those 3 years, there was some questions as to like, what could really be used with this thing? And of course, crime moved to it first more than anything. I mean, there was more porn and more crime on the web than there was actually websites, right? That they found out, man, hey, we can deliver this stuff. And so even in some of those early days, crime was like, you know, kind of take on this aura of like, oh, what's out there? I see a lot of similarities in between those times and then 30 years later in 2018 or 20 years later in 2018, when we say similar things about Bitcoin, and you just said it yourself, like to be used for what? You're going to have a hackathon where people are going to kind of do some things to maybe figure. I see a lot of similarities between 1997 and 2017.
But at the back then though, there was, like what, when you ask the question, what can pets.com do for me? There isn't, at the end of the day, if I can buy the same thing while I'm shopping at the grocery store for almost the same price, then there isn't any underlying differentiation, right? Versus if you ask the question, what can Bitcoin do for me? Then that's when it becomes a commodity, or there's the answers are more inherent to the situation rather than just some 20-year-old, you know, CEO that just bought a domain, right? There's no secret sauce there.
Yeah. Well, I see some very similar in the way the public is treating, or the way the public is seeing this.
But I think I understand the question of the same, but I think that's also because they don't understand. And so people didn't understand why is pets.com great. And then they came to the realization or answer, oh yeah, it's not that much different than Baker's. And so then, but now they're asking, what is it, you know, what, why is it different than the money I keep in the bank? And there are real questions, there are real answers to those questions.
Yeah. Well, in those days, 97, we could not imagine a day when a UPS truck would pull up in front of every house and deliver boxes of stuff. People were like, because it cost a lot of money to ship. If you're going to ship anything via UPS, you were spending $7 to $15, which in $97 was a lot. And you would, okay, you start thinking, okay, so I'm going to buy the same. Can I go down the street and get the same thing? And they couldn't see how delivering on the doorstep, it just was so different for people. Today, we take that, like, of course, why wouldn't I just get boxes? In fact, we're creating whole, you know, whole industries around protecting the boxes and taking pictures of the boxes. And you know, Amazon's going to try and put them inside your house, right? I think the same thing's going to have to happen in the cryptocurrency community. This is why I think your hackathon's so important, because we need to continue to hack on this thing to figure out where is its real strengths and where will it live and what place will it be. I remember in the very first podcast you and I did, I asked you, is Bitcoin going to be the one world currency? And you were like, not in a million years, right? That's not what it was designed for. But that was a very ignorant question, because I think a lot of people think that. I think they think it's going to be a currency of some kind, and it's value and it can act as a currency. But I think we are just scratching the surface on where and what this ledger, what this blockchain can do for us. The coins are kind of a side point, to be honest with you, to the blockchain technology. I think the important part is, what can we do with the blockchain that adds value to somebody's life? How can we make that work, and how can we secure it? The coins are a little gimmick, to be honest with you. They're a little gimmicky. And though, just like you said with the Ethereum stuff, they can be a little distracting and a little gimmicky, to be honest.
I'm relying more on an alternative to Bitcoin, because it does, you know, the whole point is decentralization. So it does feel like it's a freeing that we're not tied to Bitcoin's price or whatever the fees are, et cetera. So the coins are, I mean, so we have we have an email newsletter that we are starting, and it's going to be maybe a little bit technical, but more like this is what Edward's thinking about buying today type thing. And so, so if anybody wants to, sign up for that, they can, we'll put the, I can give you the link. But for those that do like the coins, cause I like the coins, I like to gamble, and guess the bottom and such. So, for those that do like that kind of stuff, that would be one way if, you know, cause I get a lot of questions and what should I buy? You know, what's gonna skyrocket tomorrow, right? I don't know, but I can throw out some, I can spitball some ideas. So
we'll do that at the end of the show. Tell you what, right. We'll save that for the post show. So let's do some speculative stuff in the post show. Right. Just a reminder, if you're listening, the post show is made available to our Patreon subscribers. So go to theaverageguy.tv, click on Patreon, $1 a month gets you in, and we provide the audio and video for both the pre and the post show. That way I did put the link to your newsletter, and that's good. That's good. I out in chat. So it's available. Edward, there is an element though. I do like, you know, well, I just called him a gimmick. There is a little entertainment value in not a little, actually there's a lot in a lot of people like to collect things, or they like to trade things, or they like to speculate on the market. This is really good for this. I have maybe spent a whole $30 of my own money and maybe $800. I won't say it too loud. Sarah doesn't hear me. In equipment to mine, right? And everything else has been what I've produced. I'm spending a little money on power and some of those other kinds of things. I actually had a fridge that was burning up a lot of energy. It was an old fridge, and I replaced the miner. We threw the fridge away. So it was just a one-for-one trade, which was actually pretty cool. But you're right. There are some, and for people who like to do that kind of thing, it does. This is another thing that we haven't done this before. We did this with junk bonds in the 80s with penny stocks, right? The same kind of idea. Cheap, could get in for a penny, and you hope it goes to two pennies, or you hope it goes to five pennies, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's nothing new. I think it's a little better. It's a little easier. It's easier access getting into these exchanges. Is easier these days. Where I'm using Poloniex and Bittrex, and we're using Mining Pool Hub to actually kind of mine these, and you can move them around fairly easy. And once you're in an exchange, the fees are pretty low. So for a lot of people, that would be a good way in. I've recommended Coinbase. Are there others? There's two others in the United States, but are there others that you would recommend if folks as an entry point to get into the system besides Coinbase?
Even, and we were talking about, you know, the nice hack earlier and you know, the risks involved, but even Poloniex has gotten a little bit of, bad press, or, you know, rumors of scandals. And so I use it. I mean, I implicitly trust it by using it, but, Poloniex makes me a little nervous. Bittrex is not taking new customers now.
They shut it off I got in early on it, but one of our listeners did not and wanted to get in, and you can't, right? So they're upgrading their systems.
Well, they say, they're...
You know more?
No, I'm just saying, like, I think that is probably closely tied to the whole Coinbase IRS thing of, like, I think they know a lot of people are using it to get away with, and even you didn't specifically ask, I don't think, but like even the price run up at the end of the year, I think is tied to tax evasion, in large part. I don't think now in 2018, I think there's a lot of promise, and there's, I don't think that, I think we'll see a dip. This is not financial advice, et cetera, but I think that we'll see a dip after the first of the year for that reason. And then the rest of 2018 will be the general steady incline after that.
So if you're getting in, you're listening to the show and you're thinking, holy crap, I need to get in on this now. The expectation should be, to be honest, you're buying on the downside, right? For most people, let's just be honest, this, like you said, we'll probably see a pullback. There'll be some profit taking as well. This is what happens in the stock market. There'll be some folks who are going to, at the end of the year, who are going to take profit. We're going to talk about taxes here in just a second, because I think this is important. But then I think, like you said, I think January, we're going to see a dip, and everybody's going to say the bubble is bursting, and that's the best time to be in it. Like, you want to be in the market as the bubble is bursting and ride that burst all the way to the bottom. Yeah. So just get prepared for it. If you're thinking about that now, it could, listen, I'm not a magician. I can't predict the future, but chances are that's what's going to happen. And if it doesn't, awesome. You're in, you're not going to lose any money. It's going to be great. You talked about tax and tax evasion, but let's just talk about taxes for the average guy. John Biggs and I have been talking a lot about this over the last couple of weeks, but we do have to remember that this is a taxable event, and the United States IRS, and every country is going to vary, but the United States IRS is going to view this as property. So anything where you generate income off of it, right? So if I'm mining, I'm supposed to be tracking it, and anything I make on mining and any gains I make in it when I sell or transact it have to be reported as taxable income. Is that, do you think I'm close on that? I'm no tax attorney, by the way.
Nope. Yep. So yes, it is. Well, yeah, same here. I know what I do, but I don't know if I would be, I don't know who's going to be listening. So I don't know if I feel comfortable, opining too much. I use the basic framework because, and I even mentioned this, in my notes of like the idea of people are even talking about in 2018 with the new tax code of how that's going to change how, if you're buying, if you're selling, if you're trading Bitcoin, for Ethereum, right? That's a quote unquote taxable event. I am not of that opinion. I think that is a fairly political reading of the, and they just want to line out stuff. But the, so my point being, from my perspective, unless it converts into US dollars, it's not, you don't have to claim it. That's my opinion. I don't even know if that's what my accountant might slap me for that. So the, so when you're mining, you know, you, if you make $1.50 in whatever burst or whatever storage last month, then when you sell it, you get your $1.50, you pay tax on that. You know, in terms of like what the parallel is for, is that because mining is its own beast, right? So if I buy Bitcoin and it goes up, that's really easy and obvious of what that is, what's happening there compared to like stocks. If you deal with mining, like, are we dealing with farming or income or like, you know, you had equipment that you bought. So are you depreciating that against it? And, you know, those are all things that you need to talk to your accountant about.
Yeah, no, that's the magic words right there is everyone needs, if you're going to do this, you figure it out yourself or you consult a tax attorney on this. It's pretty clear at this point in everything we've been reading that any mining is going to be treated as ordinary income. So you're going to have to do a 1040 SE against that. It's like a 1099. You're going to have to self-report that income that's in there. Anything, and John just said this in the chat room, any trades or property are treated as property exchanges. There are some questions inside the exchange of what that means. Yeah. And you're right. And so, you know, you know, and how much do you want to track? And so the beauty of this, is up to everybody. Like I'm not filling out your taxes, Edward. So it doesn't matter what I think. You have to fill out your taxes and be accountable for them. But certainly if you're going to get into something like this, keep good records.
In my, like from my viewpoint, I think that would be something potentially where like the tax bill just passed. So you're going to see a whole rash of opinions coming out, a whole rash of like supplemental material that makes some clarifications. So we could see the last day of 2018 where the IRS says, yes, if you were converting from one cryptocurrency to another, or they have some sort of framework that they end up complaints, all of a sudden the last day of 2018, they say, yep, that's what it means. And then, you know, usually that stuff retroactively applies. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but like learned about it is that I don't think the administration is that blind to what is going on out there that they would find negatively, but I'm also being optimistic in that. Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, and from a IRS point of view, they have to remember that, do they really want to go after the mom and pops or me, guys like me who are doing $500? Does that really make sense?
Yeah.
It costs them more in revenue to do that than it does. They're really concerned. There are people who have made millions, right, in this. And a lot of our Silicon Valley friends who are on top of ICOs, and who are right, who've been in this for a while, they have made millions, and the IRS is concerned about them. And there was a news piece about Coinbase having to release the top 25, whatever, I don't know, 2,500, I can't remember what it was, names to the IRS based on transaction volumes. And so I think it needs to be taken seriously. I'm just going to say that. If again, I'm not a tax attorney, but if you're going to do these kinds of things, you should probably take those into mind. I've been keeping pretty good records. I've got a spreadsheet of things that I do. Just jot some notes down from time to time. It's tracked in the system as well. I can go back and get my history. So all those things are available. You're going to have to deal with that at tax time. Just don't forget about that. This, the IRS is going to come or in, fill in the tax authority in the country of your choice, wherever that happens to be. They're going to ask some questions. The U.S. is leading the way on this. This tax thing is still going to shake out over time, and yep. we've got a lot of work to do the IRS or the government has a lot of work to do to kind of figure this thing out. Right, it's a new kind of a new problem for them. You have in the notes here Nebraska Mining Center. What does that mean?
That's the mining that, well, so one thing you mentioned earlier was that I wanted to talk about more is the proof of stake, right? So we're looking at how we can, what's coming after proof of work, or how can we diversify, I guess. But in the meantime, we're going full steam ahead with proof of work. And so we have we've got some space that we're going to stuff full of some ASICs. And so we're going to churn out some Bitcoin and Litecoin and whatever else we can mine using proof of work. So we're going to hopefully have some folks come along, you know, join us in that to also buy, you know, we're just like buying a plot of land, right? We're going to buy a plot of land and get a bunch of people to plant some crops with us. And we're going to hopefully sell the crops and make some money for them. So that's what the Nebraska Mining Center is. And just going full scale.
When does that open, and how do I get involved in this?
So we're looking for we're treating it. It's not technically a fund, but we're treating it like a fund. We're looking at like $100,000 minimum to invest, and the it'll be the first quarter. And then where it's actually located, I don't know how public we're going to be with that information. So I can fill you in later, maybe as yeah. things.
No, that makes sense. Makes sense. Very, very smart that way. So an ASIC, for folks that don't know, an ASIC is basically a kind of a dedicated box just built for mining. Super efficient, uses energy much better than our GPU setups do. Can mine even faster than them. And so it's a more efficient way of doing mining, an ASIC miner. They have them for Bitcoin for sure. Some of the other coins, it's funny, some of the other coins have ASICs coming for them. And then there's a whole group of coins that are ASIC resistant, is what they say. And they're like, nope, we're not going to allow ASICs in. So is there a little battle going on between kind of the, you know, the big farms and the small farms?
Well, so we're actually using you were asking about the difference between Bitcoin and Litecoin. And that is one of the major differences, is that Litecoin uses script mining and Bitcoin uses SHA-256. So we're leaning a little heavier towards script, and then we're using a pool. So we're not mining one single coin. I don't care what we're mining. It's just, you know, it's automatically mining whatever is most profitable. So,
yeah. Which is interesting. We talked a little bit in the pre-show. I too have used, we've been using Awesome Miner. That's kind of what the group Uyghur and some of the others I'm hanging out with. We've gone to Awesome Miner for some of these, and we're using a mining pool hub as kind of the pool. And there's this idea of mining for profitability, but I have also been thinking about mining for value. In other words, I think there's some coins that are at the 5 or 6 cent range that are probably undervalued at this point. And because of the frenzy that is going on, getting a coin to go from $40 to $60, while you say, whoa, that's a 20-point jump. Well, if you invested in 40, I mean, that's not that much of an increase. But if you can go from 7 cents to a dollar, that's a huge jump, right? And so I've been actually mining coins for profitability and then shifting those into smaller coins to get larger numbers. Is that a smart way to do it, or is it just a way to do it?
I think it's worked out pretty well to diversify and just take some risks and buy some stuff that could shut down tomorrow. And thankfully they've quite a few of them have gone up. You find yourself watching the charts a lot, and so it can be kind of time consuming. But as long as you put some limit orders in, and you can, or stop orders, and you can, you don't have to watch them, and you just maybe hopefully double your money when they bump up. So
yeah. And I'm looking at those even longer term. And yeah, since, right, I have so little dollars in them to begin with, I'm not, yeah, too that worried about it. Like, you know, it's kind of, yeah, like when you can buy 9,000 Saya coins for $50, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, sounds good. I got 9,000 of something. Yeah. You know, it's like Chinese food. You get 9,000 pieces of rice. So, you know, it's, and they're small, right? And the thought is, well, maybe it'll go, and I'll keep my eye on them. And I'm still going to work with Bitcoin. I'm still going to work with Litecoin. I'm going to totally shun Ethereum after hearing about what you no, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. But to say the least, there's some interesting, when we think about what's most profitable, I have been using that term to kind of fund the other coins, mm-hmm, then that I kind of want to invest in.
That is a fine strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also getting involved like with Burst and Saya and Storage. I'm getting involved in those companies. So I'm doing their offerings just to kind of know, like, hey, what's this company doing? And what are they, yeah, you know, what are they involved in? And so some of the other coins, I'll be honest, the Z coins, Zcash, Z Classic, Zen coin, I know very little. They're all Equihash based, and I know very little about them. So I kind of need to spend some time, like, where do these Z guys come from? You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's only your time is limited, so I mean, it's good to learn about them, and you know, you find things that you're interested in, and focus on those, and you know, it's kind of hard, or it's going to take a while if you're trying to learn about everything that's out there, but yeah, you know, you see new names, like new things that come out on the market, and if it piques your interest, then dig into it and maybe invest a little. I mean, I think, and that's one of the important things is like what we're talking about is like if you have some hobby, right? Drones, you can spend a lot of money on drones and go buy a drone and fly the drone, but then can you monetize that? Like, what's the ROI on a drone? Like, it's fun, yeah. But then, so versus a coin where you can actually put some of your money in and maybe actually make some.
Yeah. And, you know, Mike Weger, who normally joins us, he actually has a drone, and he's created a business around it, you know, but the point is still valid. Like, it's a hobby. For me, it's still a hobby. It's a learning hobby. And, mm-hmm, and so I kind of treat it that way. Okay. You got some hardware behind you that we probably, yeah, need to take a look at. So this is a pretty, for folks who haven't, just go on YouTube. If you just put in mining rigs, you'll see this, but describe a little bit of what you got there.
Yeah. So I've got,
oh, did we? Maybe we shouldn't have done this, Edward. If you can hear me, you've locked up. 1 second. Maybe we shouldn't have moved you. That may be. Yeah, keep spanning there. We can't hear you yet because we're having some bandwidth trouble. But are you on Wi-Fi? That's probably the problem. That's probably part of our problem is you're on Wi-Fi. I should have probably made
you. What a mess. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's all right. We're shoestringing this thing. I'm usually better than that. But what folks saw on the screen, and many of our listeners listen to this on audio only, so it doesn't really matter. You've got a fairly traditional mining rig with an open frame. I think I saw three cards that are on there. So what? Four cards? What are you running at this point?
That one is going to. Oh crap. Been a while. I believe that we are using a pool to mine Ethereum. I don't think, or anything besides Ethereum.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, keep going.
That's all. That's all. It's Ethereum. So Ethereum. I don't remember what pool we're on, and it just it's actually got some. I've got one card. If you can see that, I've got one card directly on the motherboard because I was having trouble with the riser. So there's a it's its own. It's when you get into that stuff, it's its own beast. It doesn't you know, you can use some concepts from traditional IT, but it is a new. There's some new stuff that you have to wrap your head around. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting. And this whole new industry has grown around this as far as selling open cases. As far as selling risers, I think we all know about the impact that this thing has had on the video card industry. Yeah. And they're a little hesitant to ramp up their production speed because they don't want to ramp up and have this thing fall out. I mean, they too are afraid the bottom's going to fall out of this market and they're going to ramp up their production and stuck with an inventory of a million video cards, right? So they're like, I don't know. Both NVIDIA and AMD have been stated as saying we're going to keep production levels kind of where they're at. It's driving, you know, it's driving up the cost of the higher end cards. So on the NVIDIA side, a 1070 or 1080, the 1080s are really hard to find and they're pretty expensive when you do find them. That's why I like that 1060. It's kind of in a sweet spot where you can still find them and they're like $200. So it's a pretty sweet spot for mining. The 470s. 580s, and I think, and I don't know the AMD side as well, but on the AMD side, again, the higher end cards are harder to find. If you go on eBay or if you go on Amazon, you'll see folks that are selling them six at a time, and you can buy the risers with them. It's created a whole new class of motherboards, and so now there's just Bitcoining is what the BTC is what they call them, boards, where they're just loaded with PCI slots. And it's the short ones where they're made for risers. And I just saw one at 13 slots on it and three power plugins for different power supplies. So you can run power supply A, you plug it into the board and it runs ports 1 through 5, let's say. Then you plug in power supply B and it runs 6 through 10. And then C runs 11 through 16, whatever, 13. And so they're designed specifically for these open case, you know, 13 CPU on one motherboard setups. And it's pretty crazy and the board itself, I think $240 was the last price on that board that I saw. I imagine that price will come down some, and then power supplies are going to run you $150 to $180.
The more cards you can run on one system, then you're obviously more efficient, and even the, like you were, I mean, the power supplies themselves are pretty much custom built, right? Like there wasn't any concept of that really before this, and so there wasn't much to design new hardware for before mining came along in, you know, the past decade. So it's kind of neat to see some the innovation and competition happening. So
yeah, it's kind of changed the way we look at building these. And, you know, an ASIC is kind of the end of the line design run on these. It's taking all of that and jamming it into a smaller box, making it more efficient, you know, getting the cores to run a little bit different. I mean, there's a lot of things that the chips are specifically designed for them. So you get a lot more out of it. But if you're going to do it, I have found, Edward, for the average guy, I have found four cards is the sweet spot. It's a good for most people. I have two different PCs. They had two PCI slots. I could put them in and out buying equipment. I already had power supplies that were 650 watts or more. Those power supplies have two or more, you know, power plugins for the cards, right? They need the six prong. Yeah. I forget what those are called.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I don't need to buy any more equipment except the cards and, you know, check your motherboards. But that seemed to be a sweet spot for me.
So how many cards do you have running per PSU then?
Two. So I think I have two systems. Yeah, it handles them just fine. I have a 750 on one and a 650 on the other, and it's handling them just fine. Mm-hmm. Got the 750 and the Core i7, so it's got a little extra power for that CPU if I need it. Mm-hmm. And then the 650 runs on a Core i3. No power issues. If anything, I probably over pushed my UPS devices that I plugged them into. I actually just crushed a battery. I was plugging them all into one, and I just crushed a battery.
I don't even use, I burnt one socket already. I don't even use UPS or anything.
Yeah. Well, I ended up purchasing two more UPS boxes and specifically putting one UPS per unit, just to kind of, and I needed to do that a little bit anyway. It was one of those kinds of things where I do want mine backed up and I want to be able to gracefully shut them down. And I want that cleaner power. I think that comes from a UPS. So, it was something I did anyway. So, So apparently you're not, did you build that rig or is there somebody there building it for you or who do you have doing it?
So we are working on getting something together that we can actually sell. So the idea is that we would do some sort of larger production run. And there's been interest, like, I mean, there's two people so far that have shown it. One, we've sold one, and then, so we've had another system we sold, and then this one, somebody's talking about it. So whether we sell this one or order one for them, it doesn't matter to me. So we're certainly people that aren't as have some don't want to do all the research and figure it all out like this. They can buy this, and you get to a point though where you talk about like six cards and whatnot, where it's not the prices. You know, it's expensive to get into with all those GPUs, and so. So trying to find out what the market will bear in that regard. So,
yeah, after I got my first card, you start running it and you're like, oh, and in those days, NiceHash was like $1.25 maybe. And you're like, well, this isn't any fun. Like let's throw two at it. Right. And then, so you do two and then NiceHash went on a run where the prices went up. And so that $1.25 turned into $1.50, $1.75. So two cards would get you $4. Yeah. Then you're like, oh, and then we saw some $5. And then you're like, hey, if I throw two more cards at it, it's $10. Like, yeah. When you start doing the math, you're like, okay, that's like an 8-month payoff, I think. And, to be honest, you think 8 months, well, I'm already 6 months into that first card. So, I'm getting close to my payoff for that first one that I bought. Now, I don't really think of it that way, but if you have to think of it that way, just go ahead and do it. and so that's where it gets a little addicting, as you're kind of like, oh, you can, it's like mining with Burst, you're like, oh, hey, a 4 terabytes is good. What could 8 do? And,
the fact that there is, there's two things going on there. There's like the NiceHash network and sharing your resources, but then also it's tied to the price of the coin sometimes or to some degree. And so then if you pay out in Litecoin or whatever, and the price of Litecoin goes up, then your ROI has just compressed because now you're dealing with like a 4-month payout instead of a 8-month payout or whatnot. So,
And in some cases I spent, in the early days, I spent money on cards that where the price went up and that card got more expensive because I spent money that would have gone up in some cases would have doubled if I had, but I spent on a card. So a 200 card in theory became $400 and Uyghur was like, stop doing that. Leave the money in there, buy the cards with cash. Yeah. And that was very, very smart on his. Yeah. And again, it's all a mental game. Those things can come back. The prices can come back and then it's not, it's just a mental game. Okay. One more thing before we go into the post show. Do we want to talk? You're thinking of starting a crypto podcast of sort. Do you want to talk about that or?
So I told you earlier, I've got a whole lot of equipment here and we're not using it. So I have a entire podcast setup sitting next to me, not being used. So yes, we do. So podcasts, I've got the YouTube set up. We're looking at the middle of January will be the first recording. And the goal is that since we're out there and involved in a lot of the different communities in different states, right, that people talk about or people want to know what's going on elsewhere. And then I think there's a lot of demand for knowing that other people are doing stuff and then one resource for all of that. Some people are doing Facebook groups, some people are doing Discord, some people are doing Skype. There's all these calendars. And the analogy I use is to the AM radio stations out back when they were like in the farm communities. the radio is the way that they hear about these, what other people are doing in the county or whatever. And so that's kind of what we want to do, is we want to be the AM radio for Midwest Bitcoin and blockchain. And so interview personalities. So we'd have folks on from each of these communities and then talk about the events and what's happening, startups that they're building and whatnot. So that's the goal of the podcast.
Yeah. Cool. And we'll talk about that here on our network as it gets going. I just know there's some folks that are interested. About half the community wants more of this. About the other half is like, stop talking about crypto.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just where we've divided. I'm not going to turn Home Gadget Geeks into a crypto podcast. I'm going to talk about it. Like, I'm going to do it. It's super interesting to me. And I think it's part of the future. And much like the PC, I think the blockchain is here and it's going to be here to stay. And I'm going to talk about it. So I'm sorry. You can always shut it off. If it says crypto in the title, just skip to the next one. But we are going to talk about, it won't be everyone. There's been a lot of news going on right now and a lot of excitement around. I think some of that will die down as we get into next spring or so, and it'll get more normal. We'll continue to talk about it some. And Edward, most of our post shows of the last 2 months have been all crypto. So we do a regular show and then we go into, and then Uyghur will be like, okay, can we talk about crypto now? So
one of the things I wanted to, I mean, obviously the people can comment on the videos and such, and we talked about having the chat on YouTube Live as well. And so I do want to find out, you know, folks from your audience, you know, wander over to our channel, then I do want to find out what they want to talk about in here. So
yeah. Well, I'll get some feedback from them and I can send that over to you. Jim@theaverageguy.tv, if you want to send that, if you're listening and you want to send that over to me, to most of the folks, we have 15 or so that do live. But the rest do it recorded. So if you get some feedback, you might even hear my voice on there, in this case. Yeah. And so, pretty excited. I need to come by your studio there and help you guys set up. So we'll find some time. I'll find some time to get out there and give you guys a hand.
Sounds good.
All right. I think with that, we'll call it a wrap. We're going to get in the post show. I'm going to ask you some specific questions about individual coins. And we're going to get kind of speculative and nerdy. I'll leave that out of this show. But again, if you want to get access to the post show, available as a Patreon subscriber, head over to theaverageguy.tv, find the Patreon link, click it. $1 gets you in. This is a little commitment to the show. Appreciate your sponsorship of it. Everybody who's $1 or more on Patreon gets access to the audio and video every single week of the post show, pre and post show, and a lot of interesting things happen in the post show. So you might want to do that. Head over to Patreon and get signed up for that. Now, I'll remind everyone, we're coming to the very end of the December Ghost Browser Challenge. We've been trying that out as a community, and hopefully you've been getting some feedback in there on Ghost Browser. We're getting to the very end. I've been using it all month. And appreciate you doing it as well. Now, still time to try it. And we thank Kat and Larry for coming on here at the beginning of the month. Still time to try it out. If you haven't tried it yet, ghostbrowser.com, get you in there and give that a try. Really interesting alternative browser to Chrome, especially good for developers, especially good for productivity experts. Give that a try as well. Don't forget that the AverageGuy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners, get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. For more information, visit Maple Grove Partners. You know, it's Christian, maplegrovepartners.com. Plans starting as little as $10 a month for podcasters. It's a really good deal. So if you're podcasting, you just want to blog, got a lot of data needs, Christian's got you covered. $10 gets you in. $10 a month gets you in. maplegrovepartners.com. I think he actually released a coupon code too in our last show. And I think it was Jingle, something like that. Go back to the show notes it's in Cyber Frontiers. So go to theaverageguy.tv, click on the last Cyber Frontiers. There's a 10% off Maple Grove Partners coupon code in there. And like I said, I think it's Jingle. If you use that at Maple Grove Partners, they'll give you 10% off the plan and a great deal. It's already very, very inexpensive for a great deal going in. Don't forget, if you listen to Home Gadget Geeks on an app, but you need to listen to us live, you can do that through our mobile app. Head out to homegadgetgeeks.com. Best way to get us live. Hey, Edward, would you do me a favor? Would you mute for me 1 second? Just I'm getting a weird noise from your background. Then I'll bring you back in for the post show. Just hit the little mute button up here in the toolbar up there if you can. Just a reminder, you can get that app, homegadgetgeeks.com, many of you have, and head over to that. We thank LastPass for their sponsorship of that mobile app, and you can check out all the new things that are going on at LastPass, lastpass.com. T-shirts are in full swing. Like I said, you're going to get we're going to get a brand new looking T-shirt here in the spring, so last chance to get the old school OG Home Gadget Geeks T-shirt available on at theaverageguy.tv/shirt, and I'll thank Addie for her help in getting those running. And then you can sign up for the newsletter as well. If you go to theaverageguy.tv/newsletter, there's a sign-up form for it. I send it about once a month. I was trying to do once a week. It's just not happening. But if you want to get signed up for that, you can as well. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. We're going to go into the post show, and we're going to speculate. With that, we'll say goodnight.